Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We will bring to you to order the Akron Metropolitan Area Transportation Story Policy Committee meeting of Thursday, December 15, 2016, promptly at 1:30. Do we have a quorum?
Yes, we do. None today, no.
No audience participation today. Moving forward, item number two, the minutes of September 22nd, 2016. Questions, comments, concerns?
Move to approve.
Second. I have a motion to approve. I have a second. All in, I have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. Hearing none, motion carried. Moving forward, staff reports. Item 3A, financial progress report. Mr. Curtis Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Real briefly, attachment 3A shows you our financial progress report. As you can see, we're through October. We did submit our billing for November, but we didn't get it in time to update this. But we are well within budget and looking good heading into the new calendar year. As some of you know, we're on the fiscal year that starts and ends in June, July. So we're about halfway through. October shows us at about a quarter way through. So we're in good shape.
Excellent. Do I have a motion to accept?
So moved.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. Hearing none, motion carries. Item number 3B, technical progress report. Mr. Baker.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. I thought this was going to be brief and just say, hey, we have obviously a new president-elect. We don't know what to expect in terms of infrastructure. You know, we're hearing a lot of really positive things, hearing a lot about private investment, which make us maybe a little bit more uncomfortable in terms of how that would be done, in terms of, you know, tolling or privatizing roads. But the only thing I can say right now is there does seem to be a sense that there is an interest in infrastructure. And based on Elaine Chao being appointed as Transportation Secretary come January 20th, she's been a player in sort of the world of politics and the world of kind of government bureaucracy for 20 plus years, which I think would lend itself well to, if there is an infrastructure thing, having that money funnel through existing channels, which would include AMET. So my hope is that we will see additional infrastructure money possibly being discussed and potentially even trickling in through our region. The other thing I wanted to talk about was that I was informed about 5 minutes before a conference call today that there was going to be another conference call on the MPO coordination reform, which I think you recall was the issue that the Federal Highway did a notice of proposed rulemaking that all MPOs need to serve their urbanized areas and not how, like, AMATS is structured as being a two-county agency where we have most of Akron's urbanized area, but some of Cleveland's urbanized area, Streetsboro, Hudson, Twinsburg, et cetera. We heard today that, in fact, that rulemaking was approved. It was edited slightly, that it will go into effect, but the additional impact or positive thing is that there is a option now where MPOs, if we agree with our counterparts that we share boundaries with, which in our case would be NOAACA in Cleveland and SCATS, which is in Canton, if we all agree, plus the governor agrees that we need to maintain our separation as agencies, we can apply for an exception to the new rulemaking by the federal government. The positive thing also is that, which this is sort of strange, is that we don't have to make any changes to our MPO boundary until after the 2020 census is completed. The 2020 census are usually completed 2 years after the decade date, and we get 2 years after that. So we're actually talking about an implementation year of 2024, which brings in a whole lot of questions because we will have a new highway bill by then, which could totally rewrite these rules, which could totally change how we approach this. It's an outgoing administration that's approved this rulemaking. We have 7 to 8 years to figure out how to do it, but it is a real concern if we're really put to the task on this, because we would have some very hard decisions to make. You know, does the MPO become smaller? Do Streetsboro, Hudson, Twinsburg, et cetera, get forced into NOACA versus AMETS. What do we do? How do we deal with our surrounding communities? It's going to be a big process. So, like I said, it was just announced today at a conference call at 11. I just printed out the 108-page explanation. So we're gathering intel, and I think the only thing I can say right now is that we will keep you all abreast of where we think this is going. Obviously, it'll take a lot of coordination with ODOT. At this point, you know, our goal is for AMATS to stay the way AMATS is currently constructed. We think it's a good system. We think our members and the public understand it, using county boundaries as sort of boundaries for our MPOs. You know, we could be in a situation where parts of communities are in both MPOs, basically. You know, South Hudson could be in our area, and North Hudson could be in NOACA. It's a really strange thing. There were a lot of dissatisfaction in all the comments that we wrote a letter, as well as many others. But at this point, we'll have to decide with ODOT whether we try to change our boundaries, whether we try to stay the same, and all that stuff. So, like I said, it'll be a 7 to 8 year process, but I think it's important to be on everyone's radar, especially for those boundary communities that really could be impacted in the north. And if anyone's interested in talking to me about it later, I did actually bring a map of our urbanized area, so I can show you if you're curious if you're in or out, so to speak, of the boundaries. But again, those boundaries change every 10 years. So in 2020, those boundaries should actually expand. But that's kind of what we're dealing with right now. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and I apologize that it's kind of a short minute or short notice news. But are there any questions?
Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Baker. Mm-hmm. Item 3C, AMETS Federal Fund Report, Attachment 3C. Mr. Poulet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since our last meeting, I don't have too many new and exciting things to report as far as funding goes. A couple projects have sold, a couple TAP projects. The Headwaters Trail, Hiram Extension in Hiram sold, and the Freedom Secondary Trail Phase 3 in Akron also sold, and the Freedom Trail Phase 3 will be the final link in the Freedom Trail series that links Akron with Kent, so it'll be exciting to see that project done. The other thing that I wanted to discuss was I'm trying to put together a new format for funding balance tables, and what we want to try and do is keep each fund, SPP, CMAC, and TAP on separate sheets, because that's how ODOT does it, and really each program needs to be kind of dealt with separately as far as balances and such. So the main reason for this is just to kind of try to realign our accounting methods with how ODOT does theirs. And one of the things that you'll probably find confusing, or you might find looks different, is how the balances are calculated, because typically on our other sheets we just took the lump sum balance and transferred it to the next year. But in reality, ODOT takes those balances and they kind of allocate it to a number of years. So that kind of affects how much is really transferred to the next year. And the other thing was the funding policy subcommittee. We met on December 7th in Talmadge, and this subcommittee is working their way through the funding policy. And what we're going to do is, when we're done, probably we'll have a couple more meetings, and when we're done, we're going to present the changes to you at one time at one of our meetings. So you should be probably seeing that sometime in the spring, the proposed changes. And other than that, I think that's all I have for funding. If there's any questions, I'm glad to try and answer them.
And Dave, if I might add too, we were successful in getting two loans that will help projects deliver this year instead of next. We got about $2 million to help push Goodyear's project, the final Goodyear project in Cyberling, and we were able to get another $700,000 to push forward Kent's Portage Trail, or the Portage Trail, bike and hike trail facility as well. So I think, you know, one of the things we talked about a couple months ago was really trying to push projects forward and be aggressive with it. And so we are doing that this year, which I'm really pleased with. So I think, you know, we won't have to worry about giving money back this year or anything like that. No.
Thank you, Mr. Poulet. Moving forward, item four, old business. There is none. Item number five, new business, regional public transit plan, attachment 5A. Mr. Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attachment 5A in your mailout is the regional public transit plan. It was developed as a component of the upcoming 2040 plan update process. The purpose of the public transit plan is to analyze the region's existing transit system and make recommendations that are eligible for inclusion in the upcoming 2040 regional transportation plan. The final 2040 plan approval will be requested in May of next year. The public transit plan presents a wide variety of data and discusses the current level of ridership and coverage provided by the area's two public transit providers, Metro RTA and PARTA. Metro and PARTA both provide standard fixed route service to the general public, along with demand response service to the elderly and disabled. Metro and PARTA both provide superior service to the general public as well as to the elderly and disabled compared to similar transit agencies across the country. The ridership and coverage analysis and a transit plan then lead to general recommendations which will improve the existing transit service for those who already use public transit in addition to attracting new passengers. Primarily, the MS transit plan underscores the importance of preserving the existing transit system through the maintenance of Metro and part of bus fleets, as well as their building infrastructure. The bulk of AMAT's attributable federal funds have always gone towards the maintenance and preserving of Metro and part of bus fleets in a state of good repair. The AMAT's transit plan also recommends operational improvements, such as increased frequency on high ridership routes, in order to satisfy demand as well as for traffic congestion management. Additional recommendations are also made for increased coordination between other transit agencies and social service agencies. The staff is requesting approval of the MS Regional Public Transit Plan. Are there any
questions? Seeing none, I will entertain a motion to accept.
So moved.
I have a motion. Do I have a second? I have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. Hearing none, motion carries. Thank you. Item 5B, draft congestion management process report. Attachment 5B, Amy Prater.
Performance measures
that we use. We're volume capacity ratio, density. For transit, we use level of service. For transit, level of service means headways, not how full or empty the buses are. We also used vehicle hours traveled and vehicle miles traveled for our system-wide analysis. We analyzed freeway congestion for existing and future, arterial for existing and future, intersection congestion just for existing, transit congestion for existing, freight congestion for existing. For freeways, we use the highway capacity manual, and we use the peak hour analysis to determine densities of our freeways. Of the freeway segments that we had, 42 of the 206 freeway segments were considered congested. In the future, 78 of the 196 segments were congested. Some segments were combined in the future. We also did a weave analysis for the freeways, which takes into account very closely spaced interchanges. Of the weaving sections that we examined, 9 of the 20 were a weave problem existing, and 5 of the 20 were a future problem. Please note that 7 of these weave sections were not analyzed in the future at all because of extensive ramp modifications that are currently in progress. For arterials, we use part of the capacity calculator that ODOT provides us, and we use a peak hour analysis to determine volume capacity ratio. For the existing congestion, we had 35 of the 597 segments that were congested, and future there was 138 of the 596. For intersection, we used the highway capacity manual planning level analysis. 30 of the 34 intersections were considered congested. Please note that these were specifically selected, assuming that they were congested intersections. So most of these should be congested. For transit, we did a level of service analysis. Basically, level of service A is passengers don't need schedules, the buses are less than 10 minutes apart, all the way down to the buses are over an hour apart and they don't really know when the bus is coming. They don't have a schedule. And here's a picture of our buses. We just wanted to share it. The results of our transit level service analysis are on table 4.1 and 4.2 in your packet. We also did a freight analysis. Most of our freight movement is by trucks on freeways and major state routes. So improving these roadways would also improve freight movement along the routes. Rail movement is generally not impacted by roadway congestion, but removal of aggregate intersections could improve safety and also increase road speeds. For our system-wide congestion, you can see, we did 2010, which was our previous existing congestion study, 2015, which is our current existing study, and 2040. As you can see, between 2010 and 2015, most of our levels of service have improved, but by 2040 they will go back up without any additional projects. We also analyzed incident-related congestion, and what we did for that is we took the results of our safety report and we overlaid that with our current congested locations. And we pulled out all the segments and intersections that were both reoccurring and incident-related congestion, and these are our main concerns. Some of our strategies, we have supply-side strategies, such as capacity and operational improvements, and then we also have demand-side strategies, such as ITS, bike pedestrian facilities, transit, and demand management. Our strategies were evaluated for their effectiveness and feasibility, and they're all listed on table H, appendix H. The ineffective or infeasible strategies were removed for future analysis. Most congested locations were given a recommendation. The ones that were omitted are listed on appendix I. These locations lack physical, financial, and geographic feasibility, or they have decreasing congestion or traffic volumes, or they have a project that is adjacent to the segment or on the segment themselves. So we have no updated data on these segments. We have 33 roadway recommendations. 9 of those are freeway locations, and 24 are arterial and intersections. We also have various transit, freight, and supplemental strategies recommended in Chapter 9 of our report. And this is a map of our recommendations. Next steps. The draft CMP will be reviewed and updated with comments. The final CMP will be presented in January for final approval. Recommendations from the CMP and other needs reports will be reviewed for the 2040 Regional Transportation Plan. And the plan recommendations will be prioritized by need, financial constraint, by forecasted future. Any questions? Yes.
Can we partner and notify any of the rail companies in the area?
They were not contacted with the CMP. The CMP actually took information from the transit report and the freight report.
We have a non-voting tax number. We received our mail out.
I've never seen it.
Hold on,
Mr. I know that across the arsenal, the rail on the arsenal is called Campanella. Norfolk Southern has a 100-foot right away. They don't even use it. And we haven't really contacted them about it. I don't think we've contacted them in the finishing of using that in the trail going east into the Atonga County and all the way to the Appalachian situation. We brought that up at the Parks Commission in Portage County, and I never hooked up with Parks right here.
Yeah, Mayor, we typically do try to engage with the rail freight companies. I think a lot of members could also concur too. They're incredibly difficult to work with and to get, especially if it doesn't specifically seem to involve, you know, something specific. It's very we've always struggled, and a lot of communities do, with getting that input.
Well, you know, the one thing that I think we should do is contact our congressman, because Congress has immediate supervision over there, mm-hmm. and I think they'll listen to a congressman.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can work with our congressman. I'm in Dave Joyce's area. I'm down here in Tim Ryan.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Others, but I agree. They don't, because if you contact them, they don't pay attention to you, but they will have a congressman.
Yeah. Well, and I think even from a state side, I mean, we heard Frank LaRose, when he was at our annual meeting a couple of years ago, said, if you ever need help on that side of things, like, it's like, you know, contact us as well, contact the state, because he said sometimes that carries at least a little more weight than just being contacted by a local community. But it is a challenge that we're aware that we have, we tried to get even for like freight data for how many trains a day, and they were very difficult to even give us, because they saw it as competitive data. So it's a tough nut to crack, and if we had more information, I think we could do a better job.
WikiLeaks, you know. I got everything.
Yeah.
Coalition.
Yeah.
Are there any other questions?
Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Prater. Item number 5C, 2013-2015 Traffic Crash Report Update. Fluid.
Discuss the crash report, but to discuss why you don't have it yet. usually I have that wrapped up in the fall, sometime September. I just wanted to bring you up to date on why we don't have it done yet. The biggest reason we don't have it done yet is we changed our methodology from using text data to GIS data. Typically, we got our data from the Ohio Department of Public Safety. When we get this data, we kind of use the description of that the officer had in the crash report to determine its location, and then we kind of rationalized everything and separated them into intersection and non-intersection, and then we just kind of summed up the number of crashes that happened at the same location. What we did this year is we decided to move into a GIS-based data. And that took a little more time because it's our first year, and there was a lot of preliminary work to do, and there were some surprises along the way that we had to deal with. But when using this method, we download the data from ODOT, the Ohio Department of Public Safety. What they do is they get the data from the Ohio Department of Public Safety, and they take it and they check the coordinates and they plot them. And then all these plotted crashes are available on a tool they have called GCAT. It stands for GIS Crash Analysis Tool. And it's a really, really useful tool, but it doesn't tell you like how many crashes occurred at the same intersection or at the same segment as far as being able to rank them. And for example, this is what Kent would look like in GCAT. They have this is the 2013-2015 crashes plotted in Kent. And it's nice to look at. You can maybe pick out corridors that have a lot of crashes, but you can't look at this and say, okay, that's the worst corridor and that's the worst intersection. So what we had to do was we had to develop a system where we could kind of capture all the crashes that happened at intersections and all the crashes that happened at segments. And what we did was we drew a 250-foot radius around every intersection, and then we drew a 50-foot buffer on each side of our segments. And we did this to all the classified roadways in our area, plus those areas that I knew had crash problems. So it was a relatively simple thing, like out in eastern Portage County, in rural areas, it wasn't too bad. And by the way, the little green dots you see, those are the crashes. So in some areas it wasn't a bad thing, but in urban areas it became much more complicated and time consuming. So this is what the CBD area of Akron looks like. So some of the challenges was setting this all up in GIS. We had 1,700 intersections we had to set up, and we had about 1,300 segments we had to set up. So we had like over 3,000 shapes that we had to set up in our GIS system. Then once we started plotting the crashes and looking at the data that was behind them, I discovered a lot of these were plotted wrong. And so I had to kind of had to do a lot of checking, let's just put it that way. I had to look at a lot of police reports, and I had to do a lot of checking to try to catch these improperly plotted crashes. Intersection versus non-intersection was kind of a challenge. I'll give you an example of that in a moment. And ramp interchange areas were quite confusing, so I'll also give you an example of that. And crashes referenced to an address. Some of these were plotted as long. So intersection versus non-intersection, you can see the crashes that have the red circle around them. Those are obviously non-intersection crashes because they're outside of of all the buffer zones we have around each intersection. But the crashes that happened were a segment and an intersection kind of intersected. We had to look at those a little closer to try to figure out exactly which type of crash it was. This is an example of a freeway interchange. This is Maslin Road and I-77 in green. There's just so many crashes happening at some of these interchanges that it's hard to say it happened at this ramp and it happened at that ramp. But I can pretty confidently say it did happen in this interchange area. So we might have a ranking of interchange areas in our next crash report. And then a lot of crashes that were referenced to an address were actually for some reason back where the building was instead of on the highway. So these crashes that you see circled in red, those are crashes referenced to an address, but they were plotted actually where the building is. Like this is, a lot of this happened in commercial areas where you have a plaza or something, and we had to kind of manually put those in the correct segment. A couple of things. There are some things that stayed the same. We deleted all the animal and construction zone crashes. Interstates and freeways are not analyzed. The high crash location still must have a minimum crash rate of 1 and at least 10 crashes. And our method of ranking them is still the same. So that's where we are with the crash report. I'm very optimistic that I'll have that done by the next meeting, and you'll actually have a list of locations to look at and possibly use if you pursue safety funding. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
And Dave, you know, one of the things that we said to the TAC was we said, you know, this is obvious, as you can see, it's time-consuming, but our question to the TAC was, is this level of analysis still valuable to you as local communities? This, you know, being able to kind of aggregate crashes and rank them to identify them. And the overwhelming answer from the technical committee was yes. You know, we don't have the time to necessarily go through all this. And, you know, AMAT's sort of the first cut of looking at, hey, what are my problems in my community? So, you know, we see that there's still value in that, but, you know, obviously getting this new system up and running is taking us a little bit more time. But we feel like once it's up and running, I mean, Dave didn't mention he's processing 4 years of data, so next year it'll just be 1 year of data to add to the mix. So our hope is that it continues, that it'll be a smoother process. Yeah.
Were we, Dave, we were having problems sometime back of reporting agencies, the police department's not reporting this information to you, for all over. Are we getting it now?
Yeah, I think that ended up better now. I think that ended up is better because
Baymax doesn't know to end up by the way.
Right, but I it seems like as time goes on that problem has decreased.
Dave, you should mention about police stations.
Oh, yeah. One of the things I found. When I was checking, because I did a lot of checking, I just didn't have a lot of confidence that I wanted everything to be right. One thing I found was a lot of crashes happened at police stations, and then it occurred to me that a lot of times the officers go back after their shift or whatever, and they fill out their crash report, and then they use those coordinates to record the crash. So I didn't. Not every city. There was just a couple. But Akron had a tremendous amount of crashes on High Street and University. Yeah, that was a really bad area. So just because I'm so close to that, I knew that it really wasn't. I think that's what put me into it, because it just then I started looking at all some of the other ones too. But it's just little things like that I would constantly find that I'd have to go back and check. So that's why it's kind of taking longer than I would like it to take.
Thank you, Mr. Poulet. Any other questions? Item number 6, resolutions. Resolution 2016-14, approving amendment number 9 to the Transportation Improvement Program fiscal year 2016 to 2019 to add 3 new projects, revise the funding to 2 projects, and revise the schedule to 1 project. Attachment 6A, Mr. Play, again.
Okay, thank you. Amendment number 9 is adding 3 new projects. The first new project is in Akron, the South Main Street corridor. This will, the limits are from State Street to Mill. There will be kind of a total reconstruct with adding bike lanes, a roundabout, and some green infrastructure. Construction scheduled in fiscal year 2018 using $5 million in discretionary funds or otherwise it was called a tire grant. So that's the first new project. The second new project has kind of been on radar for a while, but it's now being added to the current TIP. It's Cleveland Massillon Road in Fairlawn, from I-77 to just north of Bywood Avenue. Engineering in 2017 using $200,000 of recently acquired safety funding, and then right-of-way is planned at 19 using $120,000 of CMAC funding. The other new project is in Twinsburg. This is at the I-480 and Darrell Road interchange. Virgin Diamond Interchange is tentatively planned. Engineering in 17 and 18 using $732,000 in recently acquired safety funds. The funding is being revised to 2 projects, Howe Avenue. We're adding an environmental right-of-way phase, which is actually will be called engineering in fiscal 18, using $40,000 from the other right-of-way phase, and then $94,000 in state funds. And then State Route 91 Canton Road in East Market in Akron is adding engineering in 17 and 18 using recently acquired safety funds. The phase in 17 will receive $400,000, and the phase in 18, $100,000. And then Streetsboro signal upgrade is just a schedule revision, moving construction from 2020 to fiscal year 2019.
Questions for Mr. Poulet? I have entertained a motion to approve resolution 2016-14. I have a motion. Do I have a second? I have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you very much. Item number 7, other business. Mr. Rubio would like to speak to us.
Yeah, last at the tax meeting, Tony DeRanker spoke about our, we're kind of tweaking our noise wall policy within the district, and I'm sending around a sample letter. Basically, we still get inquiries pretty often, believe it or not, of residents wanting noise walls, and throughout the two-county area, probably more in Summit than Portage, but what we've done in the past is we do GIS work with the auditor's office, because to be eligible, these things have to predate the highway. The homes have to predate the highway. So we do some preliminary GIS work, and then we would go into some type of the actual noise analysis. What we're going to do from this day forward is if we get an inquiry, we do our GIS work, and some further study is necessary, we are going to send a letter similar to this out to that local resident that's calling or emailing, but we're also going to bring the city in and bring them in the loop and make sure you're on board with the analysis going forward, and we're going to ask that the formal request for the traffic analysis come from the city administration. So we're all on the same page, we all know what's going on, and then down the road, if that analysis, you know, proves the walls are warranted, we'll call you in, have another meeting, and then just move forward. But it was something that we've had recently, and we think it's a good change to bring in the cities earlier and do that moving forward. So if there's any questions I can answer.
Seeing none. Thank you, Steve.
Sure.
Moving forward, item number 7, other business. report of the 2017 nominating committee. The chairwoman.
I'll be reporting today. Connie Cross is also on the committee with us. We discussed it. We reviewed what AMEX had done in the past. We had some volunteers for Korea in the past. The chair has, in a number of years past, served a couple terms. As you know, at last meeting, Glenn kind of volunteered. We then, after our discussions, we then contacted both mayor's office, Mr. Broska and Bobby Deshard. Name's a little bit off, so I apologize for that.
She's not here, so you don't have to.
I will be making the nomination if there's no objection. Both applicants or nominees basically agreed to serve those terms. So at this point, I'd like to make a motion to appoint Glenn Roska as the chair for next year and Richard for the vice chair.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed the same. Hearing none. Thank you.
You sure?
Item 7B. Yeah. 2017 MS meeting calendar. It's attachment 7B in your...
Yeah, this is very, very similar to the last year. Take note, October 6th is the annual meeting scheduled date for next year's annual meeting, but you'll see that we are pretty much spaced out January, March, May, September, and December. You know, it also gives us the ability, if we ever do need to call special meetings, we do have that ability as well if something does come up. But, you know, we try to check these dates with major conferences, make sure we're not, you know, in with OTEC is a very popular conference for people in our field, so... Make sure that we don't kind of, you know, kind of make those kind of conflicts. So we should be in good shape.
Questions, comments, concerns? Thank you. Item number 8. Next year,
we have a... I think we need a motion on that.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Do I have a motion to accept? I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed the same. Calendar is accepted for 2017. Okay, moving forward. The next regular meeting is Thursday, January 26, 2016, at 1:30 p.m. right here in this room. Anything for the good of the order?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Congratulations to the first.
Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Anything else for the good of the order? I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed the same. We are adjourned. 14 to 13.